yellowtail rebuilding schedule, made a change to prepare Monkfish Amendment 6 for catch shares after September 2010, and made a change, prepare joint amendment to form scallop yellowtail bycatch sectors or other catch share mechanisms to allow yellowtail ACE transfer. So those three changes were made, and in addition, there was discussion about a buyback program and the council supporting a buyback program. So what we decided to do is revisit those new additions and bring it back to the council to see if we can satisfy all those requirements. So that's what staff did over the since the last council meeting, and I'll prepare a presentation that will make some recommendations. So in addition to those three things, it's come to my attention that the council may also want to consider a skate action based on perhaps the SSC revisiting ABC for skates. And it's my understanding that there may be a motion to a request to also add herring to the mix in priority. So that would we also need to discuss that since we are revisiting priorities. So what I suggest is that we hold off on the that I go through the presentation with a recommendation on how to address the three additions from the November council meeting. And then after that discussion, I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that we look at the merits of adding herring and skates as a separate action on top of that, or at least let me go through the presentation. So then you could debate whether herring or skates should be added. And then if something's added, you're going to have to take something off the table. And I think we need to get it all done today so we can get on with our work. We're falling behind on some things like Amendment 15 with scallops. So without objection, I'll go through the presentation. Okay, first slide. In November, the council decided to initiate an action to allow groundfish sectors to transfer yellowtail flounder to scallop sectors formed to address scallop fishery bycatch of yellowtail flounder. Next slide, please. What is not clear by the council's motion is what problem is that motion intended to solve. The immediate impetus for the motion seems to be the difficult decision on how to allocate the yellowtail flounder ACL between the groundfish and scallop fisheries. The council would benefit from a clear identification of a problem statement. This will help provide context for developing alternatives and evaluating their impacts. Here are four possible issues identified by staff. There are likely others you may want to identify. If the problem is clearly defined by the council, then an alternative can be constructed that addresses the problem. It may be that the council's identified solution, allowing transfer of ACE between some groundfish sectors and some form of scallop sectors, may not be the best solution for the identified problem. For now, let's only consider the first two problems. Not enough yellowtail flounder for either the scallop or the groundfish fisheries. Next slide, please. During the development of Framework 44, the scallop and groundfish PDTs estimated the amount of yellowtail flounder the scallop fishery would catch if it harvested the planned yield. These estimates were based on recent observed discard rates, future scallop and yellowtail flounder stock sizes, and the scallop management program. For the adopted scallop management program, the projected catches over the next 3 years are of the same magnitude as recent catches in the fishery. While catches are expected to increase as yellowtail flounder stocks rebuild, in the short term, they are not expected to increase dramatically from recent catches. These catches are actually less than some of the catches in earlier years, no doubt due at least in part to the changes in scallop fishery regulations. Next slide, please. As a percent of the U.S. ABC, the projected catches of Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine, and southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail flounder will decline from 2010 to 2011 and stay at a similar level in 2012. The percentage increases for Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder, but this has to be taken with a grain of salt. The percentages increase with yellowtail, Georgia's Bank yellowtail, but this has to be taken with a grain of salt. The fishing year 2011 and 2012 USABCs for this stock are preliminary and will be revisited in the summer of 2010. The current values of 2011 and 2012 reflect the most pessimistic of the two assessment runs that are currently being used to manage this stock. In 2010, the SSC did not rely solely on the single run, but also considered the results of a more optimistic model when setting the ABC. In addition to assessment changes, three other events might change the value of Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder. The council may revise the rebuilding strategy for this stock. Remember, we discussed that yesterday. The percentage split between U.S. and Canada may change up or down, and that's addressed every year. And Congress may pass legislation that treats the U.S.-Canada resource sharing understanding as an international agreement, which may result in higher ABCs. Overall message, over the next few years, as stocks rebuild and ABCs increase, the yellowtail flounder taken by the scallop fishery is likely to decline as a percentage of the total removals. If mortality targets are met and projections prove accurate, by 2015, typical scallop fishery catches could be less than 5% of the total removals of all three yellowtail flounder stocks. Next slide, please. Since 2004, groundfish fishery catches of yellowtail flounder have been constrained by low stock sizes and very stringent regulations. Even so, recent catches suggest groundfish fishermen could likely harvest the entire expected catch from a rebuilt stock of Georgia's Bank and Cape Cod yellowtail. It is not clear from recent catches that the same is possible for southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail, but catches consistently exceeded 5,000 metric tons through much of the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. U.S. catches peaking at over 25,000 metric tons in 67. While certainly the regulatory environment has changed and there are fewer fishing boats than in earlier years, in the absence of trip limits and day at sea restrictions, as under sectors, it seems reasonable to expect that the groundfish fishery will be able to harvest all of the available yellowtail flounder when all these three stocks are rebuilt. Next slide. In summary, one, if the problem is not enough fish for the scallop fishery, in a few short years, this problem may resolve. Two, there will never be more fish available than the groundfish fishery can harvest. Three, over the long term, allowing transfers between the two fisheries may not resolve these problems. And lastly, this is not intended to be a definitive analysis. It is merely intended to indicate why we need to define a clear problem statement. Next slide. Now, in looking at whether or not to proceed with this joint action, I think we need to look at the scallop work as well. In January, February, we are now going to be involved in resubmission of Framework 21, and secondly, submission of Amendment 15, DEIS, was targeted for the end of January to submit that, in the end of February for final submission of the draft. We've lost a minimum of 2 months revisiting Framework 21 with staff, and we're not going to meet those that planned timeline at all. We're not going to meet the review, the public hearings, and it seems very, very difficult for us to meet the final action for the council to vote on Amendment 15 for scallops, which is ACLs, AMs, and not consolidation, what do you call it, stacking. It's going to be a new overfishing definition, new fishing year. It's going to be very difficult to get that in place for March 1st, 2011. And it will be absolutely impossible to do if the groundfish, if the scallop committee has to do a sector bycatch amendment as well. Although I'm putting some fear in about not meeting our deadline, if we don't meet June, we can schedule a special council meeting in July, and that's about the last one we can do and still implement by March of 2011 the ACLs. So we're shooting for June. It's going to be almost impossible. It will be impossible if we do a joint bycatch sector action. Also on the scallop plate is a SOC 50. We have a scallop assessment and three subcommittee meetings, February to May. In July, we're going to start Framework 22 with two-year specs. I predict that will be extremely contentious. We're going to have new reference points, and we're going to have perhaps a new overfishing definition. I do suspect this will be contentious. So that'll be Framework 22, two-year specs, and there's an issue with the timing of the yellowtail allocation with November at the November council meeting. So we have to get that in on time to get that in place March of 2011. So then if you go to, so based on that description of the joint amendment between groundfish and scallops, I'm recommending, you can see in the handout that what was approved in November 17, 2009. Okay, that was exactly what the council approved. The three new actions, the joint amendment with groundfish and scallops to form scallop yellowtail bycatch sectors or other catchier mechanism to allow yellowtail ACE transfer was new. An amendment or framework to reconsider seven-year yellowtail rebuilding schedule. And the third thing was the monkfish amendment, which, is fine. I'm not recommending that change. But the new asking you to revisit priorities by looking at the straw man priority revisited, and instead of having a groundfish committee look at a joint action and the seven-year rebuilding for yellowtail, I suggest the council be the action, full council address that, and that Tom and Ann bring that directly to full council and no groundfish committee. And I'm also recommending that there be no joint amendment with groundfish and scallops to look at the transfer of yellowtail ACE, and that everything else stay the same. So that's the end of this presentation, Mr. Chairman, and there are, again, looking at this revisited priorities, the council has to also address, I believe, skates, a potential skate action, and that would be that, as you recall yesterday, there's some additional data that the SSC is scheduled to look at in March that may change the ABC for skates. And if you change the ABC for skates, it may change the allocation for the bait fishery and the wing fishery, up or down. So that the ABC is being revisited by the SSC in March as it stands now. We certainly ought to have a placeholder that if that happens, do you want to just keep that information there until you look at priorities for 2011, or do you want to address the skates? Now, my feeling is probably I would recommend that you perhaps one issue you could consider is having that done later in the year and then having it as a priority for 2011 to address it. But we're not going to know whether it needs to be addressed up or down until after the SSC review. And if you have the SSC review in March, it's going to be difficult not to wait, several months for an action. And the herring, I understand the herring motion will be to develop a catch share program as soon as possible. And so that would need to be debated along with the impacts of timing and resources and workload under the Herring Amendment, which has two amendments going on now, Amendment 4 and Amendment 5.
Discussion? Jim Otham?
Yeah, since I made the motion last time to try to accomplish this, I don't know. It must be somewhere else because I'm quite sure we've given up a lot of scallops in the past few years because there wasn't enough yellowtails to for the prosecute the scallop fisheries, several million dollars a year. And now to see that, well, we're going to have enough yellowtails, it's just I'm missing something somewhere. I don't know where it is, but I can't. I think it's a problem we need to look at. We're not 100% sure that the assessment's going to go up like we think it is. And if it doesn't, I mean, I think we gave up a half a closed area trip this year, you know, going forward, because we didn't think there was enough yellowtails for the scallop industry. And I think when we can identify places where we're losing millions of dollars, we ought to be able to figure out a way to fix that and not just say we don't have the time. I mean, it was driving the debate yesterday, yellowtail issues for some people. It drove the debate in November. It changed people's votes. And if we could find a mechanism to try to deal with that, then I think we've really got to do it. So, I mean, that's all I can say. We know this has been a problem. I can't predict the future of yellowtails, but I hope we're right. There's going to be enough for everybody. Well, probably not enough for the groundfish runs, but I think if we don't figure out a mechanism so that we can balance fisheries here, we've got some bigger problems than I'm thinking. So I'm in favor of pursuing this and making it a priority because we know it's losing millions of dollars. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to stay on this topic. Anyone else on this topic? Sally, then Rodney, then Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with what Jim just said. You know, even though there was a last-minute fix provided suggested to the council, the details of which we don't really know, but we understand there's something in the works there, I don't feel like it's appropriate for the council to rely on something that's a gentleman's agreement as much as that has to be a part of fisheries with something that is this limiting and this important and gets this heated out of control, quite frankly. We need to have something where people really understand what the rules are and what the options are for dealing with a limiting species like yellowtail. So I guess I would ask you, Mr. Chairman, in the context of the Interspecies Committee, the way the priorities for that committee are written up are in fairly general terms, which makes sense because, as I understand it, your intent there was to make sure that there are broad guiding policies for the council on these umbrella issues. But there are a couple of things, this one included, how to deal with yellowtail across the two major fisheries that perhaps could be dealt with in that most appropriately in that context. And so, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are on doing that in the context of the Interspecies Committee, dealing with a joint groundfish scallop amendment specifically on yellowtail, which would be consistent with your ideas for the committee to just figure out how to deal with cross-fisheries problems.
Yeah, I too would like to have a little more discussion about this. I'm not prepared to let this issue go. I understand the constraints that have been presented, and I understand the presentation we just received, but I too think that this is something we've talked about at least for a year, if not two, and something we've been dealing with for longer than that. And I'm not prepared to accept, with all due respect to the executive director, to accept a pass on this, and I'd like to have some more debate. Rodney?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with all the previous speakers. I feel the same way. This is too important of an issue to just sweep it under the table and say we'll deal with it later on. Every time there's a lot of expertise on the scallop committee and a lot on the groundfish committee. Every time we come up with a solution on the scallop committee, we say we can't deal with that in scallops. It has to be dealt with the groundfish. And we get in groundfish, they can't deal with it. That's up to the scallop committee. So the only way we're going to resolve that is you're going to have this joint action. That's my feeling. Thank you.
Mary Beth. And Tom, if you want to come to the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, getting ready for this discussion, I went back and listened to our discussion in November just to sort of clarify where do we leave off and what were the concerns that people had at that time. And when I look at what was approved, what looks different to me on the paper versus, you know, what I thought where we ended was on the Interspecies Committee, that we were only going to move number three forward and that the other items were going to drop off. But there were no motions. I mean, it was kind of like, I think, nodding heads around the table. You know, if we're going to do this and not do that, then for the Interspecies Committee, the way I left the discussion, and when I listened again, I still felt the same way, that Interspecies was going to be number three and the other items were going to drop off. So when I saw this come back and look the same, I wondered about that. I agree with the previous speakers that we need to deal with yellowtail and scallops and groundfish and that interaction. Sally made the suggestion that perhaps interspecies is a place to do it, but I agree. I think with Rodney that you need the expertise of the scallop committee and the groundfish committee. I am concerned about, you know, having enough staff to support these actions, but I also think that it seems to me in the past few years we've spent a lot of time and we get a lot of feedback on what we can't do. We seem to be lacking that little, you know, getting up every day and saying, what can I do today? We seem to be in the mode of, okay, what can't I do today? And I think we just need to think about things a little differently.
Tom?
Well, I just want to emphasize that the council's talked about what they want to do still without identifying what the problem is they're trying to resolve. And I think it's important that we get a clear problem statement. As Jim pointed out, we've lost millions of dollars of scallops over the last few years because of a lack of yellowtail flounder. But being more precise, you'll recall that there was no limit on the yellowtail flounder that the scallop fishery as a whole could catch. And what caused the lack of loss in scallop revenues was the 10% cap within the closed areas. Allowing the transfer of ACE between the groundfish and the scallop fisheries does not alter that 10% cap, and so you still have the potential that 10% cap in the closed areas is going to limit scallop harvest. So this is why we're trying to emphasize that you need to identify what the problem is that you want solved if we decide to move forward on this. Because allowing the transfer of the 10% cap was adopted for the closed areas because of the perceived benefits from the closed areas in contributing to yellowtail. We did not want to take an excessive amount of yellowtail flounder out of the closed areas. Now, maybe ultimately we want to revisit that decision, but I would point out that in Georges Bank yellowtail flounder, the vast majority of this rebuilding biomass is located in the survey strata that is in the closed area. So we may not want to change that 10% cap. But the point is that seizing on the solution of allowing a transfer between these two fisheries doesn't change the 10% cap and doesn't remove the possibility that you're going to limit scallop catches because of a lack of yellowtail flounder. So I would, as you continue this discussion, and maybe today's not the place to identify the problem, but I want to emphasize to people that we need a clear definition of what problem it is that the council is trying to address. Because without that, it's difficult to conclude what the alternative should be as we go forward to try and address it. We've kind of done what gets a lot of criticism is in the sector development. Some people say we fire ready aim or whatever, but you know, I think we have the potential of going down that road here. We haven't identified a clear statement of what problem it is that the council's trying to resolve. And I would point out that since Deirdre's not here, you know, there's with the schedule for the Scallop PDT, and there's not going to be a lot of expertise available in the near future to address this issue on the Scallop PDT side. They're going to be very busy with Amendment 15 and those other things. So there's, even if it stays on the priorities list, I think the timing issue needs to be discussed as well.
Thanks for your comments, Tom. I think you're right. We have sort of struggled as to what the problem statement is and what it is we seek to resolve. And I appreciate you bringing up the 10% issue, too, because I don't think people necessarily think about that when they think about this problem. At least I know I haven't been. I had hands over here. Dave Gaethel.
Yes. I mean, I think there's two problems. One is, do we or do we not want to set limits for bycatch in the scallop fishery of yellowtail? And so far, you know, it appears that we don't seem to want to do that. That is, you know, I did, and I wasn't on the prevailing side. And that, to force a gear solution to the scallop, the yellowtail issue. And the second one is, if we don't want to do that, we also don't want to be in the business of perpetually splitting the baby every year and dividing up the fishery. And to me, the solution to that is to remove the cap and to do a joint action that allows the transfer of yellowtails between the two fisheries. You know, so those are the two problems. First of all, you have to decide whether or not you want to limit the bycatch of yellowtails in the scallop fishery, and if the answer is no, you don't, then you've got to find a way of allowing the fishery to get what yellowtails it needs. And since scallops are worth more than yellowtail, and we've turned fish into a commodity, whether we like it or not, I personally don't like it, but since we've turned it into a commodity, we ought to let the commodity flow freely to the guy who can pay for it, and that person's the scallop fisherman. So that's the problem. There's two problems, actually. And, you know, we have to decide whether we want to solve either one of them or solve them both together. But that's my view of it anyway.
Rick Robbins, then Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask from a timing standpoint, given the work that's ongoing on Amendment 15, between now and final submission of that action, if it would be possible after that is in the second half of this year, to take the issue up and still have an amendment that might be on a timeline for the fishing year of 2012.
If you remember the slides, Rick, the right after Amendment 15, they'll be working on the stock assessment, benchmark stock assessment, and then right after that, very quickly after that, working on two-year specs, which will have new reference points and a new overfishing definition. So an awful lot of work to get done to present to the council in September and then submit it in November for the framework adjustment.
Okay, well, I appreciate the comments on the timeline. I would agree that this is going to continue to be an important issue, though, for both fisheries, and I think this is an intersection that we need to try to develop a management strategy for. So, you know, I don't know how we accommodate it in the timeline, but hopefully it's something we can continue to work on.
I guess I have a question. Do we have to be constrained by, I mean, is D and Jess and others, are they the only ones that can do this work? I mean, I know that there are scallop staff, but it seems to me that there's policy decision or two that need to be made, and then somebody needs to take those decisions and analyze them. And are we saying that the staff that we have for scallops right now are the only ones that can do that? You know, assuming the council wants to do something about this, you know, is the choke point is that we've got two pending actions that have to happen on scallop, and we have a PDT that those are the only people in New England that can do this work? I don't know. But, I mean, I do know that when Rip and I were, and Rick were down at the CCC meeting, we found out that we got more money in our budget. And I don't know if there's an opportunity to contract somebody to do this work. I mean, there's got to be people out there that can, that are pretty handy with a calculator. Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I want to make 3 points. First, to the last point that you just made, then on to the problem, and then on to the solutions. Back when we did the Seastead project in 1994, the council didn't have time. We, MIT, Kunimesset Farm, and our partners wrote Amendment 6. I would say propose that the scallop industry, with our academic partners, SMAST, BIMS, and the help of the Northeast Science Center, could do whatever needs to be done in once you guys set the policy in the direction. Regarding the problem, in 2010, I had suggested that it would have been better to have a fifth closed area trip to closed area 2. U10 scallops, they were there, but it would have taken 260 metric tons of yellowtail, so it was off the table. The fact of the matter is we could have had that fifth trip and reduced the open area days, and that would have been a better approach for the scallop fishery. In 2009, just because of the mechanisms we used for monitoring the catch, the Northeast region had to close the area. We only took 90% of our yellowtail. We left 16 metric tons of yellowtail out there, and we switched the fleet, had 2.7 million pounds of U10 scallops in that area. We switched them into the open areas. And with the, it just compounded. It should have been the same mortality, but because of the LPUEs, it increased the mortality. The fact is we left U10 scallops out there, 2.7 million. It could have been another 22 scallop trips made if we were able to manage up to that limit. I went out there 2 weeks ago. We got 1060 a pound. That was $4 million right there just because of the margin of error due to the observers. So there is a problem. And right now, I look at 2010. What we went through yesterday is a 3.0 earthquake. Okay, framework 22 is the 8.0 earthquake. We need over 350 metric tons of Georges Bank yellowtail to be able to do a closed area 2 trip where we have U10 large scallops. So there is a problem. Now on to the solutions. Remember in May I came and asked, it was back in February last year, I asked for support to do a trip into closed area 2 in May to get a data point. And I didn't get the support for probably valid reasons, and NIMS didn't approve the experimental fishing request. But I still had a lot of trips, so I did my own little, added on a little survey component to our twine top work. Went to the same area in closed area 2 the first week of August, revisited it in the first week of October, and revisited 2 weeks ago in January. In August trip on the Celtic, we caught roughly 361 yellowtail per hour of towing. And this is we're talking the control dredges, not the test dredges. And that was the equivalent of 28 yellowtail per bushel. We went back out there in the first week of October, Dr. DePaul on the Celtic and myself on the Tradition. And we caught then what averaged between the two boats, 64 yellowtail per hour instead of 361, or 4 yellowtail per bushel. In January, same place, we were down to 46 yellowtail per hour, again, 4 yellowtail per bushel. That's an 87% decrease in the catch rate of yellowtail just by season. Now, there is a change in scallop meat weight. It's about, at worst case scenario, 20% during that October through January period. But when you look at the second metric, which is number of yellowtail per hour, you're still reducing your bycatch rate between 82 and 87% by fishing in that season. What I would propose is a management option where the scallop fleet has access March 1st and gets 50% of its yellowtail tack. When it reaches that target, the fishery shuts down and then restarts up in September and then allows to finish their trips. If what we don't know is when do the yellowtail come back on the grounds, okay, whether it's they come back up in April, May, June, don't know. But this mechanism would shut the fishery at 50% whenever the yellowtail catches start going up. And and then we're pretty sure they're out of there by September. So I think we could achieve 60 to 80% reduction over time. I don't know if the council could do that without further research. So working with our partners, Steve Cadron and Devorah down at the center, Kevin Stokesbury and Kate over at SMAST, Bill DePaul and Dave Rudders at PIMS, and then the Kunameset Farm staff, we put together a proposal to do a monthly survey, the same proposal I've been submitting since 2003, but greatly improved by Dr. Cadron and Dr. Hart as far as mechanisms. And we're going to be talking about that during the invertebrate subcommittee meeting in February to refine the draft. How to fund it? I suggest an experimental fishing permit. Back in 1999, when Dr. Sissonwein was at the center put together an experimental permit, an EA. We operated under that. We could do the same thing. Again, we could write it with the help of the center and regional office. We'd fund it by 1.1 million pounds of scallops out of the lightship area. That would generate between $300,000 and $400,000 to basically charter the vessels to do the survey. And we would it probably wouldn't affect fishing mortality by more than 1%. I think it's doable if we all work together in trying to get it done. The survey would be basically a scallop vessel fishing a standard New Bedford dredge and a turtle dredge, and we would get bycatch rates and meat yields, and that data could be used to make decisions on access programs. The new turtle dredge probably on its own reduces bycatch between 20 and 40%. I would say I don't see a solution like Tom suggests. I don't think a buying solution will work. In the scallop fleet, we like the idea of a total target and to reach it because it doesn't require individual vessel allocations, which would require individual observers, and it's very costly. We were able to operate, I think, effectively in 2009 in closed area 10 with 10% observer coverage. I think the data from that coverage, when we had outside experts look at it, was a pretty accurate depiction of the fishery. As far as other things that I would suggest incorporating in an action, a joint action, you've talked about, for example, changing the rebuilding to 10 years. I was a little bit concerned yesterday because I thought that's almost a no-brainer. Because if you chose 2016 and 50%, that sort of gives you another tool in your toolbox, but you don't necessarily have to allocate it all. It's just there if you need to allocate it. So I didn't see a downside in moving on that as fast as possible. I think you need to examine the whole concept of the permanent ground fish closures on Georges Bay. I mean, they were seasonal spawning closures that converted to larger areas and a year-round status as a means of effort control. But now you have catch shares. I would suggest eliminating those closures in the action and turning the northern part into a scallop access area where the existing habitat area is. You don't necessarily have to allocate a trip there right now, but it puts another tool in your toolbox as you develop your habitat models to be able to do an analysis on whether there should be a trip there or not. You don't have to award it, but now you have the tool set up because there's no yellowtail up there. I think that the bycatch survey providing data, examining the closures, going to the 10-year rebuilding, you have enough tools in your toolbox. The gear research is ongoing, and it's going to provide another 10, 20, 30% reduction capability. I'm concerned about things like winter flounder and skates and been focusing on that as well. I'm not just worried about yellowtail and fluke. I have to deal with that, not to mention turtles. One of the bigger problems, I think, is when you did the cat shares, you really didn't award cat. You awarded landings. And that's one of the problems now. When we have these discussions, we talk about, you know, what that's the scallop catch, what we're talking about, 10%, 15%, 22%. We need baselines. And I think it's important maybe establish baselines in a joint action. For example, the swept area discussion in the Oceana letter, you know, they pointed out the differences between the two management actions. It was like 700 square miles of swept area. You know, 700 square miles is only 4% of the swept area that the scallop fleet was doing in 1990, according to the framework documents. But we don't get credit. We keep on ratcheting down. The same problem we have with yellowtail. The scallop guy said to me yesterday, well, Ron, should we land a lot of yellowtail in 2010 or a little yellowtail in 2010? I mean, we're basically, you know, what is our allocation? 90% of what? And I just think that we're going to end up with sort of reverse, perverse incentives if we don't establish a baseline and let the fleet work towards reducing without following it down. If you remember, we had in Framework 11 15% of the yellowtail tack, and when we put on the twine tops, we greatly under-harvested what the projections were. And the next thing happened is we were reduced to 10%. That's sort of a reverse incentive, and that's one of the reasons a lot of gear improvements to reduce yellowtail haven't come into play in the last couple of years. I mean, we learned. So that, I think, needs to be done as well. So I would really urge that we start moving on these things. This is a critical problem. The industry and its academic partners could provide a lot of the help being that council is involved and has a full schedule. And that's not unprecedented. We did it with Amendment 6. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hold on, Ron. I think you got some questions. Paul Howard?
So, you know, again, in looking at Framework 21 and the industry, you know, it's great for the council to get a feel for the industry. Is the scallop industry 10%, 100% behind bycatch sectors, or can the industry give us any feedback on how they feel about us going down the road of bycatch sectors for yellowtail?
To quote "She Who Must Be Obeyed," my boss is, no way. she is not interested in that. Some of the bigger operations, they're willing, you know, they see consolidation and stacking, that they could afford observers and that they could buy shares, and if that's the way it goes, but they don't like it. They're saying if that's what we're handed, we could do it, but we'd rather operate the way we're operating now, which is we do it as a fleet. I think that's, to me, what really works with the scallop fishery, because we have a common gear and operating as a fleet is the way we address our problems. So I don't see any strong support for buying and selling yellowtail. And it's a limited commodity. And I personally think is if you allow scallopers to start buying yellowtail, you're going to change the groundfish fleet. I mean, the scallopers are going to buy it. Then what? And I looked at some of those aces that these groundfish boats have. They sent me their letters. You got a problem. Okay? I mean, you got a problem. And I don't live in la-la land where I think, oh, they're going to, once they catch their 69 pounds, they're going to come back to the dock. Okay, I try to deal with reality with the scallop fleet. And I just told you, you know, so, you know, transparent, these guys are going to, if they're going to land a lot of yellowtail if they're worried that they're only going to get 90% of that next year. You know, fishermen are fishermen.
Mary Beth?
Yeah, as far as the industry's interest in trying to pursue something, I think we all need to remember that a good portion of the industry did hire Jeff Pike. I think it was last year, it could be the year before, time flies. And that was the whole purpose of that particular group. It was a large segment of the industry, and what they were seeking were, you know, bycatch sectors for the scallop fleet. So, I mean, I think Ron is correct. I think he's raised a lot of concerns that I've heard from other people, but there was a significant portion of the industry that came forward in Amendment 15 in scoping and development of that, you know, action that said we need to have bycatch sectors to deal with yellowtail. So is there 100% consensus? Nope. Is there ever? Nope. But do we have a significant portion of the industry that has interest? We do.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, just no disagreement at all what Mary Beth said, but what I was saying is the driving force behind that is the concern that that's the only tool going to be open to them as we rush into this catch share approach. I'm suggesting that a lot of them would prefer not to have to do that.
Ron, you're a numbers guy. You threw out a number like 300-something tons. Did you say in 2012 is going to be needed for Georgia's?
From the table that was presented in the discussions in 2012 was 354 metric tons of yellowtail. My calculation at the in 2009 out there, we were catching on average 10.75 pounds of yellowtail per I mean 10.5 pounds of scallops per pound of yellowtail, whole weight yellowtail. So that's 261 metric tons to do 6.1 million pounds, which is one trip per 344 vessels.
Part of your what you delivered today was a discussion of the potential to access the area in a different way than the council's currently compelling the industry to access that area. I assume you mean all areas where there's issues like this.
And that's correct, and it might be different seasons because Nantucket Lightship area might be different than closed area two as far as the movement of yellowtail in there. Historically, it's changed. I remember in 1974 going out on yellowtail boats actually fishing that area, directed. Now, for a period of time, the yellowtail were more off of Rhode Island, around the 30-fathom curve, but, you know, between Montauk and the Cape. Now we start seeing more yellowtail in the lightship area. I don't know if we're seeing – I know we call it the southern New England stock, but I had talked to and looked at the literature. I'm not quite sure – that, in fact, that's a southern New England stock. I think it could be overflow of Georgia's Bank. So as Georgia's Bank rebuilds, it might be flowing in there. Alan Kazurian at the Marine Biological Lab has done genetic studies. If you go back to the original tagging work on why they divided into stocks. So I don't know where those yellowtail come from. I don't know where they go. But that's the purpose of doing the survey.
Yeah, I'm not sure the council can solve that issue of whether they're southern New England or Georgia's Bank. But what I think I hear you saying is one of the drivers of the problem is the way in which we currently have management structured, which doesn't create incentives or opportunities to avoid the problem, which creates the bigger problem, right? Which is to say that the way we set it's set up now, people race to catch before yellowtail drives them out. And if there's a way for the council to adjust or modify the way it asks the industry to access these areas, then I think that's something we should look at. I don't know. You've mentioned you've submitted this proposal multiple times. I don't know anything about your proposal other than what you've described today, and I don't know what the hang-up has been, but it sounds like you've redoubled and surrounded this proposal with a lot of important people that probably can find ways to write it in a way that can make it acceptable. What is it you want the council to do about that? Are you just giving us notice that you're going to resubmit and that this information will be available to us, that we should start thinking about changing the regs so that access is done in a different way?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully we'll get together with our partners during the week of February 8th. We'll generate a finished proposal. The mechanism for funding would be, as I suggested, an experimental fishing permit request. And if I have to do the writing without help, but it would be nice to have help from the Science Center in the region.
You know, I've certainly heard, I think, at the very first interspecies meeting a year ago, we had a discussion about this issue, and several members of the industry, the public, came up and talked about this problem and said, you know, you're forcing us to go in sometimes in the area and at the time when the problem's the worst. And you should really look at changing the time in which you ask us to access these scallops. So it's not a new idea. At least I've been hearing it. I think the committee and the council have heard it time and time again that, you know, there's different ways to skin the cat, so to speak. You know, please keep us informed of how you're doing and what's happening on that. Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think that we need to, you know, move forward with solutions for the issue. And we've talked about, you know, bycatch sectors, but we also need to keep in mind that Magnuson requires us to at least minimize bycatch to the extent practicable. And that's the kind of work that Ron is working on. And do scallop people really want to pay for yellowtail? I mean, they've always had yellowtail bycatch. Well, I don't think they really do. But, you know, it's the, you know, which is the option that's going to get them, you know, to work is really what they're trying to seek. And I think you need to move forward on both fronts to the best of our ability. And Ron's very focused in trying to get it so that people don't have to pay, but at the same time, if you're going to mean you're going to sit at the dock and because you don't have any management alternatives, if we move forward with an action, we're going to have to try to create a program that minimizes it to the extent practicable, and then when it's not practicable to minimize further, what are the alternatives at that point? So I think we need to be moving on both tracks.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with all of the comments that were made. And going back to when the motion was made, I tried to modify the language so that it would include things other than just necessarily the sector approach to it. I certainly think that what Ron has brought up as a possible avenue or solution or partial solution to the problem is something we do need to investigate, and I would like to see us move this ahead, and as was suggested, maybe this should be done by the Interspecies Committee and look at it from the two-phase approach that Dave Gaethel brought up. Let's look at it in terms of, you know, what is the exact problem we need to solve, come up with that, bring that back to the council, and then figure out if we need to go out and contract outside help in order to get it done, or see at that point what our staffing is in order to deal with it.
Jimmy?
Well, I don't know. I'm a little lost here because unless we can find a way I've talked to a lot of scallopers, and when they go out in there, they're concentrating on getting as many scallops as fast as they can to get home. They don't care how many yellowtails they catch per pound or so. They just don't care. There's no incentive for them not to minimize it. So if you build a bycatch sector and let them, even if they have to buy it, then there's an incentive. We've built an incentive for them to minimize their catch. Maybe they slow down their production of scallops just a little bit. Maybe they move 10 miles. And Amy gave us a great presentation one time of little blocks of places that had less yellowtails, but there's no reason for any scalloper to even think about doing that right now. They don't even think about it. So, and I've seen people in groundfish anticipating ahead of schedule now what's going to happen in June, and they're making gear changes, they're making investments, and it's unbelievable once people can see that incentive that it's how it's going to work for them. In the incentive that's happening on George's is everybody's getting separated trawls, everybody's getting rule trawls, and they're all starting to work with them only because there's going to be an incentive on an individual basis to try to stretch that yellowtail out. So if the industry is not willing to take that on, then I'm not willing to do the work to try to help them. So that's just my personal view. I mean, it's just I'm shocked. You know, I'm shocked to hear that the industry doesn't want to deal with that and find the incentive that will generate the minimization of bycatch. So,
Rob.
Don't get me wrong. You know, I just heard that there's limited resources available, and if I had the choice, I would go with the seasonality approach and the gear approach and changes to the structure of how we, the areas, if you will, make them into scallop access areas as opposed to, you know, habitat closures or groundfish closures, and do whatever we can to get more yellowtail. The problem I see when you start getting into the buying and selling of yellowtail from a scallop fleet, it's going to become costly, because you could go to sea with a particular gear, and we could regulate that gear, but on a scallop vessel, that in closed area 2, for example, I can move 5 miles very easily and probably get 3 times the yellowtail catch per bushel of scallops, and I can move off of them. You got to have 2 observers on that boat, especially if you're buying and selling hundreds of pounds of yellowtail, because if your observer goes to bed and there's U-10s over there at a 3 times the catch rate, and I only have to move 3 miles. So all I'm saying is I try to look at it when I view these things is what have I seen fishermen do in the past. I'd rather that I know he's in there in a season when there's no yellowtail or very low yellowtail. I want to make sure that he has a piece of gear required that has the minimum yellowtail bycatch to the state-of-the-art knowledge, and I think we could live within the quotas. But it would be in the best of scenarios. I certainly would like to see the ability for a scalloper to buy and sell and trade all levels of species, because that seems to be the direction we're going. But personally, with 30% observer coverage in the groundfish fleet, I think you're going to have issues.
I don't think anyone's saying it's one or the other, right? Rodney?
Yeah, thank you. I heard him say he refused it, but I didn't hear him say it was off the table. It was, I thought I heard him say it was his boss or the person you work for didn't want it. That's what I thought you heard you say.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, but that wasn't what Ron was saying. He was speaking for whoever's... He's the higher gun up there. But I agree with Ron. I yellowtailed for over 40 years. Yellowtails were not in the same place every day, the same time of the year every year. There's times when there's no yellowtails there. I had the good fortune of going out with my son. Let me make a trip with him a few years ago when we went tagging yellowtails. And I think there was seven or eight boats that went out from Esmast. Not everybody on that trip caught yellowtails. We were in the same area, but not everybody caught yellowtails. We all had what do you want to call them? Not sections. What do they call the things?
Grids.
We all had grids to go into. We had to stay in there. But they weren't all yellow. There wasn't yellowtails all over. So I think they need a mechanism to shift those areas. Those areas, remember, were closed for yellowtails, not for scallops. The recruitment of scallops came as a byproduct of the yellowtail closures or the groundfish closures. But they're in there targeting scallops, and the more yellowtails that are rebuilding, the more interactions they're going to run with them, catch with them, if we send them in there where the highest concentrations of scallops are, of yellowtails are. And we brought this up in front of the committee. By changing that, you minimize that. Another thing, I yellowtailed for 40 years. We wanted to catch more yellowtails in a sandy cobble bottom. We put ticklers on. They're mandated to have turtle chains. They act on a scallop dredge just like a tickler acts on a net. I think that needs to be revised rather than broad brush. So I don't think, my personal opinion, that the Interspecies Committee can deal with this. I think it needs to be a joint committee with experts on both ends coming up with a solution. That's the only way. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Mary Beth?
Well, I guess I agree with Rodney, and I think, as I said a few minutes ago, I mean, we need to do both. I mean, the law requires us to do both. I mean, we need to minimize bycatch to the extent practicable and create a solution that allows the scallop fishery to operate. So I guess I'm being a little repetitive, and I won't go any further. We need to do both.
Terry, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I agree with Ron that the contention that we had yesterday and over the last couple of months will be nothing compared to what's coming ahead. Paul said the same thing. And while Yellowtail wasn't as big a deal yesterday as it was in November, I think in the months to come it's going to be huge, particularly as we launch our sectors and find out how difficult they're going to be to operate and balance the books. This entire conversation has underscored the need that this has got to be on the highest of priorities for this council to deal with this coming year. And I'm not sure whether I agree with you or not, Rodney, whether it should be interspecies or combo. Whoever it is, it's going to have to be a combination of experts from industry, both advisory panels and both committees to come up with a solution before it comes back and bites us again another year.
Anyone else? Mr. Libby, then Rick Robbins.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think we're seeing a similar thing as what the groundfish fishermen are up against. We've been given our allocation now, and we're finding ways not to catch the things that we don't have a lot of. So if you incentivize the scallop fleet to do the same thing, whether it's financial through some sort of trading or the incentive to work on altering the seasons to avoid the yellowtail, we're getting to the same place, treating both fisheries in a similar fashion. I think that's a positive step. I think it's going to be better off to find ways not to catch the things that you don't want rather than have to pay for them. And if you do have to pay for them, you're probably not going to want to have to pay for them, so you will find ways not to catch them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the discussion makes it pretty clear that ultimately we need a comprehensive approach to the problem, and it seems we have in the committee discussed, as Rodney pointed out, trying to address the access areas, and I think that's the access area dates, and I think that's responsive to what Ron's trying to get at in terms of by managing those areas temporally in a little bit different way, trying to avoid the densities of yellowtail that are there on a seasonal basis. So, and I thought we had suggested that be addressed in Framework 22 going forward. So, I think we've had some initial discussions about that. I think Ron's research that he proposes would certainly provide additional information. But ultimately, I think we may need more than that, and we may need to get at this issue of incentivizing avoidance. And I don't know how you do that short of what we talked about with trying to come up with measures that would allow for some degree of accountability and transfers and mechanisms like that. So, I think ultimately it needs to be a comprehensive solution, and we ought to be discussing both sides of it.
Anyone new? Mark Gibson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the Mid-Atlantic Chair's comments about a comprehensive solution. And this problem is bigger than scallops and yellowtail, and frankly, it's bigger than just this one council. I think someone mentioned summer flounder, and as the distributions of these fish and their abundances change, not necessarily coherent to one another, there's going to be a need down the road for all of these species to be fully allocated, fully transferable, and essentially what Dave Gaethel said, the commodities that need to be able to flow around according to market-driven forces, that those who need them and can pay for them are going to need to buy them from those that have them and want to sell them. And, winter flounder at some point will be allocated. When we get enough of those, we're going to have to, they're going to be a lowest common denominator in hobble fishing opportunities. And I had some chance to think about what, Dave left us with yesterday about the lack of coherency between what's on the bottom out there and what people are allocated. And he's probably right about that, at least in a general sense. I don't think any of us can foresee what that's going to do, but there's clearly a need for these fish to be treated as commodities and flow around to where they're needed, they're most needed. So I'm starting to think this is a pretty high priority. I don't know what the best way forward is to deal with this, but it's clearly an issue, a big issue that cuts across many sectors in different parts of the industry and may cut across multiple councils. Thanks.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Harriet?
Harriet Diedrichson. I come from the port of New Bedford. I own a scarlet boat and I'm proprietor of a ship chandler in the port. I just want to make 2 points. First of all, when you start to talk about sectors and shares and all these things and the trading that the gentleman just spoke about, I want to be sure that we make it clear not to try to do other things while we got an objective of another thing as far as stacking scarlet permits. There is definitely people on that have two different opinions on stacking permits, and the people that I have affiliated myself with have sent in their names to the council staff, and those names have been vetted and looked at. I haven't yet seen that from the other group that I've seen Mr. Pike speak for. I understand the problem with the yellowtail and what you're talking about, and now you're talking about farming committees. I would also like to speak to that. If you're going to form committees where these things are going to be discussed, I would ask that these committees be fair and balanced. On the scallop committee right now, the scallop advisory panel, we have two individual boat owners, and all the rest of the people come from fleet owners or people with multiple boats. Quite a few fleet owners are represented there. It's not fair and balanced, and it's been a problem at all the meetings. You're just off the table, if not under the table. And so I would ask that any committees that are formed, it's transparent. They just asked for a couple of people on the scholar committee a while ago. I had two friends that submitted their names. I'm not speaking about myself on any of these committees that I'm looking to be on them. I was a scallop advisor from 85 to 97. But they submitted their names. They were one boat, one permit owners. They had explicit records, and they weren't chosen. There are problems, and they're known by a lot of people. I would ask that you keep it in mind. Everybody wants to be able to fish, and nobody wants to fish and hurt any other fishermen. That's not the point. But I'm asking that this be taken very seriously. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think that the dilemma that we're in now is that our initial discussion at executive committee with the leadership and bringing it forward was we do need a vision about where we're going with catch shares. And the idea was to have the interspecies committee look at all the different plans, catch share programs, and how can we best position ourselves for the future. Exactly what Mark was saying. Do we want to have, catch shares in every program, in every fishery? How do we address bycatch? How do we, just any number of things that you, as you can see from interspecies, we want to develop a plan and a vision first and then implement it. But what we're doing is, and I've been in planning before. No one likes to plan. You like to just jump right to the solutions, and that's always a problem. You end up doing twice the work if you don't plan. And so we're jumping into, solutions right away without looking at the big picture. So that's a choice, and that's a choice you folks have to make. And I think one of the things you're going to have to choose is do we jump into groundfish and scallop joint action and see how that will affect other plans that we may have to do the same thing, or do we keep the interspecies focus and develop a vision and everything on where we're going with catch shares and with mid plans and everything else in terms of catch shares or other things. So that I see that as a key decision. Do we give up on interspecies and then do a ground joint action and learn from that? One thing, I think we do have ample funds. We can contract things, but I think what we have to do is keep our staff as the PDT. In other words, any technical work or committees all ought to be supported by staff resources and then supplemented with PDTs from other resources.
Dave the elder.
Maybe.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This discussion has steadily evolved outward and upward. And it came originally from the last meeting when Jim Odlin made the motion, which I seconded. And I would point out that everybody understood that there was a problem without understanding the full dimensions of the problem. But I think they understood the severity of it because that motion passed unanimously in the council. And I think that that underscores, and the discussion today underscores the importance of doing this with a new approach. And I think what Paul said is really true, the decision we have to make. I would think that what we want to do here is to move this directly to the Interspecies Committee and develop what Paul was talking about, a vision, a direction, because otherwise we're just going to be, to use Tommy Hill's old expression, wrapping ourselves around the axle by trying to continue to do this as separate individual plan actions. I think we need to identify where we want to go with this, and I think it's of vital importance. I think it needs to be moved to the Interspecies Committee and follow the path that Paul just outlined. Thank you.
Dave the Younger.
I'm going to use one of my analogies here to kind of see if I can explain the situation I think we're in. Because of this reauthorization of Magnuson, we have a city that's on fire. Every single management plan we have has enormous problems at the moment. Every single species. None of them have escaped. And I agree with Paul. It would be nice to have a coherent plan on how to put out the fire. But by the time we get done with that plan, the city will have burned to the ground. So we'll have a great plan to put out the fire, but the city's gone. You know, we can put a very short period of time into a plan, a month, 2 months, something like that, maybe a number of meetings in a very short period. But if we're going to do some planning, we got to do it really quickly, and then we got to start solving the problems because the city's burning, and it's burning fast. I mean, every single fishery is in a crisis because of this reauthorization of Magnuson. And you know, our city's burning, and we're sitting here talking about how to put out the fire.
Rodney the Yellow Tailor.
Yeah, among other things. I agree with David. A vision is a vision. What I'm talking about is get two committees together in an action because we don't have time to see that vision. And, you know, not take anything away from Paul. You need to plan things, but there's times you need to plan things and times you need to act. And a vision, I can see a vision taking 2 years before it even comes back. That's me. I don't know if I can live 2 more years.
You don't know if you can wait or live 2 more years. You've got it in you. You've got it in you, bud. Jim?
I don't think there's any one solution to all of the things we're talking about here today, but I would agree with some of the thoughts here that anything to do with catch shares should be handled probably at the Interspecies Committee or at the Executive Committee or someplace beyond the original two committees. In the meantime, we heard some very creative ideas from Ron, and I think that all of those things that he was talking about can be handled by the SCALD committee. A lot of us have been frustrated because we had no mechanism to do things like that. I mean, I think a lot of us know what we need to do. We just don't have the ability to do it. And I'd like to get some sort of a vehicle there moving in that direction so that we can actually work on some of these things.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that Rodney's absolutely right. And when I said move it to the Interspecies Committee to develop a vision, I did not envision myself something taking 2 years. We had to make some rather quick decisions, and I think that this we have to narrow our focus while at the same time trying to encompass all of the problems. And so I just want to make it clear that I agree with Rodney 100%. This can't be some two-year process. But I think it needs to move the Interspecies Committee as quickly as possible to decide what approaches we want to use, because I still think that trying to do this sort of thing with separate committees that don't really communicate well with one another has already shown itself to be a disaster. We need to change the way we work between plans. But, well, we need to combine plans, first of all. I don't know that we can do that in less than 2 or 3 or 4 years. But we need to do something that gets us to the same place, and we need to do it very quickly. Thank you.
Pat.
Yeah, I don't actually think Rodney and Paul are saying different things. I think the point is that you have to have the discussion right up at the beginning, that what you're doing and why you're doing it, because otherwise the staff can't help you, and you're going to be going in circles over and over and again. The only way you're going to make real progress is if you establish right up front, you know, what you're trying to achieve. So, and I don't think people are saying different things, and it does seem to be pretty much a consensus around the table. There's just the question of how exactly it looks. You know, how this group that's going to talk about it looks, and whether or not it's, you know, and deciding on some way to make sure that it's the most efficient way to get to the bottom of the problem.
Yeah, I'm going to make a motion, because just to try to get this thing moving either on or off the dime here. So the motion is going to be that the Interspecies Committee deal with item number 3, and which is develop goals and objectives, issues and recommendations to consolidate our FMPs, examine our joint plans with Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council, and complementary plans with ASMFC. And that there be a joint scallop brownfish committee to deal with the yellowtail flounder bycatch issue in the scallop fishery. That would be the motion. And that the purpose of the joint groundfish, that is not part of the motion, this is rationale. Sorry. The motion was at the end of yellowtail flounder bycatch issue. That's it. Okay, that's the motion.
We have a second from Dave Preble. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. The rationale on the joint scallop groundfish committee will be to provide mechanisms to incentivize and allow the minimization of yellowtail bycatch in the scallop fisheries through bycatch sectors. And to allow the transfer of yellowtail from the groundfish sectors to the scallop sectors. And the rationale, I'm trying to narrow the focus of that committee for that rationale. And that's a problem that I think has been identified for quite a long time. Thank you.
Mary Beth.
Yeah, just a question to the maker of the motion. I think the way the discussion went, we were recognizing that this was a mechanism that could work. I think we also recognized those comments that Ron made about trying to minimize, you know, bycatch in the fishery. And so I would ask the maker of the motion, would he envision that perhaps those efforts to minimize would take place during the pending framework action in scallops, and the scallop committee could just deal with that, and then that this particular group would just focus on this one thing? Is that the way you see it going? Okay, thanks.
Yes.
I'm a little stuffed up. I guess my thinking on the joint committee is that I agree with this, but would like to expand or have the ability to consider not just council members on the joint committee, but bringing in technical people, industry, so that we can really become efficient and maximize the efforts that we're going to put in, instead of playing ping pong and having one group develop something and then send it off to another group via Pony Express and have them look at it. And then, so with the council's agreement, that's what I'm going to be looking to do. And I'd look, if this passes, I'd look for input from you and others to help define the types of people that would need to be on a committee like that. Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Jim Odlin. This is an excellent way to get started. What this manages to do is it helps to put out Dave Gaethel's fire. At the same time, we plan how to rebuild the city, the parts of the city that burned down. And just to throw in another metaphor, what we've been trying to do here is get a hard grip on Jell-O, and what we're going to do is to put the put all the Jell-O in a bowl, and the Interspecies Committee is going to do that. So we're going to put out the fire and put the Jell-O in the bowl.
Dr. Pierce, on the point of the Jell-O.
Yeah, for great. Clarify the intent of the maker of the motion. Jim, are you saying that the revisited actions 1 through 4 for the Interspecies Committee should be changed so that this be the only one? And specifically, I want to know whether you're suggesting we don't deal with action number one related to cat shares. So are you refining number three?
That is the intention of the motion, is to have the Interspecies Committee be more focused on number three. Now, if they get number three done, I think we had this conversation that we could reorder that other stuff, but that in the initial outset we should concentrate on that, because that seems to be an ongoing issue here with us. I mean, I think it's bunks and groundfish. It's a lot of places, and okay, let's figure it out and focus on that for a while. So that is the intent of my motion, Dave.
Okay. With that said, I don't want to see the Interspecies Committee set aside for a prolonged period of time, maybe never get to it, because this is a difficult issue to take on, the catch share issue. I think it's a very important task. We've discussed this already. I actually have another suggestion to make after we're through with scallops that relates to catch shares, and in particular to respond to our concerns about groundfish sector management, consolidation issues, the cap. We've already talked about that yesterday, I believe, or maybe it was the day before. So, sure, this is fine, but I don't agree that, I guess I would agree with this only if we had the groundfish committee take on the issue of catch share specifically as it relates to our working on sector management specifically. But I'll get to that point a little later on. So that my focus is on groundfish right now. So I guess I'll support this, but I'll make a motion afterwards that relates to groundfish and sector management.
Sally?
I agree entirely with what David Pierce just said, and will support this motion with the understanding that there will be a follow-on to clarify what the next priority is after this for the Interspecies Committee, so that we're able to get back to some other, if not quite equally, pressing issues specific to the groundfish fleet and the consolidation cap as it relates to Amendment 16 and the discussion that we had on Monday regarding how to deal with the accumulation cap or lack thereof.
Just so I'm clear and everyone else is clear, this directs the Interspecies Committee to focus on number three, and also charges, I guess, me to establish another committee to work exclusively on the joint groundfish scallop action. Right. Terry?
That was a clarification I was seeking. So it almost ought to be two recommendations there. Because the way it reads to me right now, it looks like it's charging the Interspecies Committee to develop that joint committee, where really I think what Jim's intention was for you to, to compose a combined committee. Am I correct? Yeah.
Anything further? Council? Go to the audience. Drew?
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, on behalf of the Fisheries Survival Fund. We strongly support this motion, and especially the chairman's ideas on the makeup of this second new committee, this joint committee, and having stakeholder input, I think, will be invaluable in moving this process forward, and we look forward to working with you on it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anything further on the motion on the board? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Dr. Pierce.
Again, relative to the priorities, I'd like to follow up on a point I just made and explain the reasons why I feel it's important for us to have either the Interspecies Committee, that was my initial thinking, or the Groundfish Committee deal with an issue that I consider to be quite critical. It's an issue raised by many groups and many individuals regarding Amendment 16. And it's the 20% cap on the annual catch entitlements. On Tuesday, we referenced a letter that was provided to us by Pat Kirkle to you, John. It was about her recognizing the concerns about consolidation of permits. And Pat indicated that she wants to work with us to develop measures to mitigate the potential negative impacts both within sectors and the amount of individual permit holders as they relate to some of the social and economic objectives in the FMP. Now, I feel that suggestion by her was very good, and we need to follow up on it immediately, especially in light of the outcome of sector allocation. We all knew initially when the sectors were forming and fishermen were scrambling to determine what sectors they should be in, we didn't know what the outcome would be. You know, what entitlements would they be per sector? How would that relate to a 20% cap? How would it relate to the objectives of the FMP? We had no analyses, no real indication of whether the outcome would be desirable or consistent with the objectives. For example, there's one sector with 8% of the total number of members of all sectors, and this is the sustainable harvest sector. God bless them. They've got 36% of the Gulf of Maine haddock, 28% of the Georgia's Bank haddock, 36% of the pollock, 47% of redfish, 43% of white hake, 36% of plaice, 32% of witch flounder. Another sector has got 33% of Georgia's Bank winter flounder. Another sector is 26% of the Southern New England yellowtail. Well, fine enough. We need to evaluate the consequences of Amendment 16 sector management outcomes, specifically the ACE distribution between the sectors as it relates to the geographic distribution of those sectors and fishing communities. So my suggestion is that the evaluation should be relative to our sector management policy. We have one. We have a sector management policy that we very seldom refer to, but it has some very specific provisions and guidelines that we adopted years ago, and I don't believe we're following them. And it also should be relative to the national policy on catch share management that's being developed right now. So my suggestion is that the Groundfish Committee should deal with the issue of sector annual catch share entitlements as they relate to the FMP social and economic objectives, to our sector management policy, and eventually, of course, to the national policy on catch share management. By doing that, we can address this issue regarding consolidation, regarding caps on entitlements of all these different stocks for four sectors, and address specifically the issues that have been raised by many council members before and reiterated by Pat in her letter to this council. So that is what I would like to see as an action taken on by a committee, be it the Interspecies Committee or perhaps more importantly by the Groundfish Committee. I don't see any actions in our priority table that relate to groundfish except prepare an amendment or framework to reconsider seven-year yellowtail rebuilding schedule. Tom and Ann are doing that. Tom and Ann, of course, are also on the staff of the Interspecies Committee, so they've got a big job there as well. One way or another, that needs to get done. So that's what I suggest, Mr. Chairman. If you need a motion, I'll make it, but maybe by consensus we could adopt that as a chore, a task, an assignment, a responsibility.
Let's put that on your chore list, Tom, for April. Okay.
Have I made it clear enough, Mr. Chairman?
I can't really read okay. What's on the board.
So it would be... It would be the action would be for the Groundfish Committee to deal with the sector annual catch share entitlements as they relate to the FMP social and economic objectives, the council sector management policy, and the eventual national policy on catch share management, which I assume will be done sometime in final form mid-year, thereabouts. But clearly, we have our own sector policy that will give us good guidance relative to these catch share entitlements and whether or not we are consistent with our objectives. And if we are not consistent with the objectives, what do we need to be consistent as we move forward? These are not ITQs. These are sector entitlements that can change. But as it stands right now, we have a very interesting breakdown of percent allocation to sectors, with one sector having a large percentage, as I indicated. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it needs to be looked at relative to our objectives.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaethel. Paul Howard?
My initial reaction was that the Interspecies Committee would go to Chris Kellogg and Tom and Ann would do the joint action. I think this is exactly what, if I'm not mistaken, this is exactly what Drew Kitts is going to do. And it's a huge undertaking. No? Okay. I was wrong. So I was envisioning a joint groundfish scallop committee that would be supported by Tom and Ian, and they would spend... you know, the whole year getting all this amendment done, probably longer than a year. So we're just adding things on here that I don't know about the Groundfish Committee dealing with this. We're running out of resources, but I suppose we can I can probably hire someone to look at it, but. You know, staff is going to start saying, well, geez, I should be looking at that too and this and that. But, you know, there is a potential to contract someone to look at this stuff.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, this is a critical issue. I mean, this is keystone. You know, this is catch share management in its initial stages through Amendment 16. We have no feel for, no understanding as to what we have done relative to catch share management and how that relates to consolidation, how that relates to impact on individual communities. It needs to be looked at. It needs to be evaluated. And if we can't evaluate it relative to the policies we have in existing now that relate to sectors, then, boy, we have really dropped the ball big time.
Sally.
I would suggest a friendly amendment that we need to consider this in light of national standard 4 that requires no entity acquire an excessive share. So aside from non-binding policies that the council has, and in addition to what is already laid out in regulation in the FMP, this needs to be measured up against the national standards as well. this is something that needs to be addressed now. It needs to be addressed clearly. There needs to be a clear expression by the council that there is the intent of considering what an appropriate accumulation limit is for the sectors. We didn't have, for many reasons, an adequate analysis or understanding of what the potential or what the appropriate accumulation cap should be for each species before the sectors kind of sorted themselves out on their own. I don't think this wasn't something that we could have done, and it's something that we must do now. The 20% was fairly arbitrary as it was set in Amendment 13, arbitrary but necessary at the time as the sector idea was just getting up and running. And now the council needs to send a clear signal that we're going to get a handle on this so that people understand that there are going to be limits, that there isn't going to be complete consolidation beyond what the council intended or expected through sectors, and that it's going to be consistent with that national standard four. So I'd ask the maker and the seconder if we could add that to make clear that this is something that is a requirement under the Magnuson Act that we do this.
I would accept that as a friendly, so we could include the national standard number four in that list. It could be added to the end, national policy and catch air management and national standard number four.
Been accepted as a friendly. Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur with Sally's comment concerning the establishment of the 20% cap. It was done entirely arbitrarily in order to get at 11 o'clock at night Amendment 13 passed and out the door. So there wasn't a lot of analysis done on that. As far as what has been done in Amendment 16, we spent at the committee level a lot of time debating this. And in virtually every time it came up and was voted on, the committee strongly, I went back and looked at the vote the other day because Tom and I were discussing this, strongly rejected the 20% cap. The council itself in the vote, and there was a vote to change it at the June meeting last year, very strongly disagreed with putting the cap in. And the discussion generally came up around the fact that, you know, if you want to put the 20% cap in, then all that happens is you force the existing sectors to divide themselves in half and double their costs, administrative costs, et cetera. And, I mean, that was the basis of the discussion. Do we need to have a discussion that says what is a reasonable cap? Maybe, but I don't. I frankly, at this point in time, to go back to the city being burning, I think that there are some other fires that require the hoses a little bit stronger than this one right at this point in time.
Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree that these are critical issues to be reviewed, but like Rip, I think the cart's well before the horse. We haven't even got these things out the door yet. We don't know what other issues and problems are going to develop during the first fishing year. And if we're going to convene a groundfish committee or any other committee to start reviewing sector problems, I think it ought to be after we've had an actual, some time under our belt. And so I would suggest that if this moves forward at all as a priority this year, it be the second priority for the Interspecies Committee following the completion of goal number three.
Jimmy.
Yeah, just following up on what Rip said, and he's absolutely right. This was fully flushed out, fully debated. And, you know, we had testimony here yesterday that one umbrella of sectors has 80% of the yellowtail. It was on the record yesterday. So we're just going to have
you know, fixed gear sector 1, 2, and 3, or shareholder sector 1, 2, and 3, which we have right now, Northeast Seafood Coalition 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I don't know. So I think it's premature. I think we did fully discuss this for days and hours and lots of time, lots of testimony on it, and we need a little bit of time to let things settle down on this particular issue. Thank you.
Pat Kirkle.
Yeah, first I want to go back to what Paul said about Drew. This is not what he's doing, but certainly what Drew is doing can feed into this discussion. And it's trying to look at how the fishery might change over time as a result of the actions the council's taken. And that's something that we haven't done historically, and sort of managed and let things fall where they may. So I think it's important that we start to try to look ahead and make some decisions about how we want the fishery to look and make sure that the management measures are consistent with that vision. And I don't think it's too early to do that because it's already happening in the groundfish fishery, and what you want to do is get a jump on that. We probably should have done it before we finalized Amendment 16. But at the time constraints probably just didn't allow for that, and although I do think the 20% cap was fully vetted, and I voted to remove it, the argument at the time was it was important to build in as much flexibility as we possibly could. I think that's really separate from the whole question of how do you want this fishery to look and a discussion of making sure that the management measures meet that goal. So I understand the workload issue. I really do. But I think that the council needs to start thinking about these issues and questions.
Mary Beth.
First of all, I don't think this is a discussion of excessive share. Excessive share, in my mind, is really on the vessel level and not on the sector level. And it's interesting to me how different regions of the country can look at an issue like this. In the North Pacific, they're trying to figure out how to get the whole fishery in one sector and create management incentives to get that done. Here, we're going the opposite direction. How do we have, you know, as many sectors or no sector with more than this amount of share of a fishery? The total opposite direction. And it's an odd dichotomy, I guess. And I think that at this particular point, I mean, there's been reference to one sector having, you know, high allocation of this versus another, and it doesn't really relate to geographic distribution of that sector in any way. I mean, the geographic distribution of the participants is not a single port, not a single gear. I don't really see a problem with that. And I think we need to give the sectors the flexibility moving into the program. There's a whole bunch of things. I mean, some of the concerns that Dave raised, I mean, nobody has enough of anything. And if we're going to, like, start out with a discussion about, okay, well, you know, here's your sector, but on top of you don't have enough of anything, we're going to talk about capping you for a particular species, some of which are very low. I just wouldn't put this very high on the list. I think that we do definitely at some point need to consider the social implications, the distribution effects in the fishery. There's a whole list, and it's not just this. I mean, it's broader, and we do need to look at it, but I'm not sure that right at this moment I would prioritize this.
Mr. Libby?
Yeah, the only thing that I've learned about limits and how far you can go through personal experiences with co-ops. I don't know if co-ops are defined as sectors, but there is something in the Sherman Act. If you get over 50% of any one stock, I don't know if it applies to all groundfish as a whole, but or if it could apply to individual stocks. But if you get over 50%, you may be subject to an antitrust violation, so maybe that's something for council to look at.
Dave?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think this is vital. We've got to be monitoring these as we go along. The question I actually have, it's a question for Pat. When we tell people we may take an action in a fishery and we may limit their access in some way, we have to publish some kind of Federal Register notice, you know, kind of warning them of that. I don't know if we have to do something here now to warn, to remind people that their potential sector contribution is not an IFQ. They don't own that fish. We can redistribute it as we see fit at any time. Because people are already walking around going, I own X amount of pounds. And in their minds, this is an IFQ. I own this. And the longer we let that perception hang out there, the harder the fall is going to be if this council decides because to, say, account for the needs of communities as the catch share national policy clearly states we may have to do, that we may redistribute this PSC as we see fit. You don't own it. You know, you get to fish it, but you don't own it. And that's why I think this is a very important discussion that we need to have on an ongoing basis. And we need to, you know, but we do need to remind the public clearly that they do not, you know, the industry, both commercial and recreational, and none of this is fixed in stone. We can redistribute it as we see fit at any time. And to me, this is absolutely vital because I do think that some communities are about to disappear off the face of the earth. Some whole states are about to be eradicated. And so I very much want to make sure that we understand the force and effect of what we're doing and at least try to deal with it before it's too late.
Doug, then Terry.
Concerning this motion, is the council clear about what is meant by deal with the issue? Could there, if we're all clear on what that is, I guess I'm not. Are we looking for an investigation and recommendations to be provided to the council concerning this subject, or what does deal with mean?
Well, by deal with it, I mean, how does it relate to our objectives for sector management policy? How does it relate to the national policy and catcher management and national standard number 4? It basically, it's an investigation, an analysis to determine if indeed we have put ourselves in jeopardy by doing something that is counter to our objectives, counter to our policy. If we can identify that we have, then that gives us the notification to take some steps. Take some steps to get us back in tune with our objectives and consistent with our policy, and of course with the national standard.
Would it be possible to use the word analyze and make recommendations as opposed to deal with? Make recommendations concerning the issues. Would that as a friendly? I'm just saying I wasn't clear as what you, and you explained it right there is what you meant. And
but that's my intent.
I'm not clear where we are on that exchange.
Maybe we're mincing words. Investigate the issue of sector as they investigate, deal with. You know, I think it's pretty obvious.
I guess as long as it's on the record, this is what he meant, that's fine. But
Terry?
Yeah, for the previous hour, we spent a lot of time talking about the importance of yellowtail between groundfish and scallops, and we've just voted to prioritize that joint committee that Tom and Ann are going to staff, from what Paul just said. So assigning this to the groundfish committee, which Tom and Ann will staff, doesn't make sense to me. So I'm going to make a motion to amend, and that's going to be that the interspecies committee deal with this issue as their second task following the completion of the primary task that we assigned in our previous motion.
just don't want to muddy the waters, but this is exactly the intent of the executive committee with the interspecies committee, is to lay out a blueprint when you're dealing with catch shares, and we didn't have this blueprint before, and now we're going to have to revisit. You know, do we want a cap? What's the impact on fishing communities? What do we want the fleet to look like? Any number of issues that are in these catch share policies, we need to set a policy and look at, you know, do we want to set aside some for, you know, like the Pacific Council did and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I think the message here is, as monkfish is going forward, as any other catch share programs go forward, there has to be a blueprint for the council, sets goals and objectives up front, and starts, implementing catch shares as a plan. What do we want to accomplish? So monkfish is underway. We've got to make sure that the monkfish committee looks at the catch share policies and addresses every one of them. And it would be nice if we somehow, interspecies or someone, develops a blueprint on what things should we look at and how should we step through a catch share problem so we don't go back and redo and do the work again because we didn't do it right.
We need a second on the motion to amend. Mary Beth? Discussion on the motion to amend. Mary Beth?
We had this discussion in November about, you know, goals and objectives and creating standards that, you know, that each FMP would need to comply with. And we had a committee that did goals and objectives for sectors, and we spent a lot of time during the development of sectors having to undo the goals and objectives because they didn't fit the needs of developing sectors and groundfish. The goals and objectives for catch shares and herring are going to be extremely different than the goals and objectives for scallops, and I really don't support an interspecies committee spending a lot of time on broad goals and objectives that then each committee has to try to fit or unfit to a particular FMP. There are plenty of you know, plans out there for telling you how to develop a catch share program, the things you need to consider, what social, identify your social objectives, identify your economic objectives. I mean, I think that's out there. We can use those tools. And as far as, you know, this particular, which I did not have my hand up to say any of that, what I really had my hand up to say was that to the motion, I think we haven't clearly defined what the problem is. I don't know what the problem is. The motion says that we want some analysis, and that's pretty clear, but it hasn't defined the problem. When we talked about scallops and yellowtail and groundfish, we spent a long time. We spent a good hour plus talking about what we thought the problem was. And here, I'm not really sure exactly what the problem is.
Well, I'll let the maker speak, but I think the implied concern is no safeguards on consolidation in many different forms that it could take, whether it's at the sector level or multiple sectors working together. There's nothing. It's wide open. But that's the way the groundfish plan has been. There's never been a cap on how many permits you can own, like we have in the scallop fishery. And I think that was my read on the letter that we got from the service that approved 16, was that at least they have concerns, and it sounds like some of the members at the table here have concerns that, you know, we're silent on that issue. Yes, there's a record of debate on that issue at the sector level during Amendment 16 throughout the committee meetings and at the final meeting, but it's in the letter, and we're being asked to consider it. So is that accurate, Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, that is accurate. Again, I'm focusing on the good points made by Pat and also reflecting on what was said by Margaret Springer when she came before us and discussed NOAA's catch-share policy that very clearly emphasizes to achieve long-term economic sustainability of fishing communities. We need to look into that and look into it now as opposed to later, and that's what the motion that's what the motion does. Moves us in that direction, as opposed to waiting a year or a year and a half, and the city will have burned down, and the ashes will have been cold.
I just ask that we stop talking about burning cities. It's really depressing. Anyone else on the council before I go to the audience? Okay, Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, speaking on behalf of the sustainable harvest sector. First of all, I spent some time yesterday. I looked at Pat's letter to the council on this issue. She says in there that she received comments on this issue and that these comments raise legitimate concerns about the consolidation of permits. So I got copies of the letters that she was referring to, and I've read them over and over again, and I'm afraid that I do not find any legitimate concerns. I don't find a statement of a problem in any of these letters at all. Furthermore, I don't find any valid recommendations on how to deal with any kind of problem. In fact, one of the recommendations that was made to the service was that until the council deals with this undefined problem, NIMS should halt the permanent transfer of groundfish permits until the council has acted to prevent excessive accumulation of quota. So stop people from selling their boats and their permits permanently until the council decides whether or not there's a problem with consolidation. I thought this was all about consolidation. We have a huge capacity problem in this fishery. Unfortunately, we have to consolidate. But the issue of an accumulation cap on a sector, I don't really see where there is a problem with this. Yes, the sustainable harvest sector has fairly substantial allocations of a number of species. We're very geographically diverse group. Our membership extends from Cundy's Harbor, Maine, to Newport, Rhode Island. We are non-discriminatory in gear type. We have every gear type that fishes for groundfish in our membership. We do have some principles that we were founded under, which is to fish in a sustainable manner and to achieve optimum yield to the extent possible. So I'm not sure what, I mean, again, I don't see a problem here, and the solutions that people are talking about are rather bizarre in some cases. I guess my question at this point is, are we talking about an ownership cap? Are you saying that people in the groundfish fishery should only own so many vessels or permits? If that's the case, that's a totally different discussion than a cap on the allocation that's given to one particular sector. Again, the allocation, the sector allocations by definition are on a yearly basis. So I don't see how, I mean, the composition of these sectors are likely to change year to year. People will have to leave the fishery. Dave is absolutely right. I've said it over and over and over again. Nobody has, not one single permit in any sector has enough fish to make it work. So, yes, there has to be a consolidation of this fishery. I know all the people in our sector. I know their families. I don't want to be the person who picks the person who has to go, but it will happen. The people will go, and that is what the council has understood for a long time in this fishery. People will have to go, and it's a really very unfortunate thing that they will have to go. I don't. They're all my friends, and I don't want to see any of them go, but We have a huge capacity problem. Associated Fisheries of Maine has advocated for probably 5 years now for a buyout to try to get people out in a humane way. We can't get any support from that from other people in the region. So, again, I The council decided in November that we were not going to do, we were looking forward to an amendment to talk about ITQs. And then you could probably have some realistic discussions about ownership caps. But no, the council said we're not going to do that. So now this just seems to me a very unwise use of your time, that there are much more important things that the council could be and should be working on. Thank you.
Paul Howard.
I may be wrong, but I think that one of the fundamental objectives of that catch share policy was to look at the impacts of catch shares on the participants, the communities, et cetera, and develop goals and objectives around developing those catch shares to meet your goals and objectives. And say right now that 25% of the permits and 25% of the landings are in New Hampshire and Maine. 50% are in Massachusetts of the landings and permits, and 25% are south. Let's just say that that's a given. Now, what is our goal once catch shares are implemented? Do we want to have safeguards that prevent, that maintain that kind of split? Or do we want to say, let the market systems go, and if it ends up that everything is in a particular place, so be it. But I think that's what Dave's talking about, is what do we want our – what goals should this transferability in selling and buying – what about the communities? What about the traditional landings by region? Do we want to have safeguards or goals and objectives that keep it that way or anyway?
Yeah. Maggie's right. We're going to have consolidation in this fishery, and that was understood, and it's probably necessary. It is necessary. But the issue is that when people talk about catch shares, and we went through that catch share workshop, one of the some of the greatest fears that are expressed about catch shares have to do with the impacts on communities and the potential for consolidation, and the changes that come about as a result of those systems. And the point is to make sure that you understand those changes. It's not necessarily caps. It's not necessarily anything. It's just that it's important to understand that there are going to be changes and to direct those changes and to do things that make sure that you do end up with the goals and objectives that you've established. And as I said, maybe it's doing nothing. I don't know. But it doesn't make any sense to just let it happen and then later say, no, this isn't how we wanted it to look in the end. So that's the point.
So you're saying what are our expectations? What do we anticipate the outcome of this Amendment 16 to be at the community level or the... Dave Gaethel.
I think it would be very helpful here to have a read into the record National Standard 4, because it appears to me that the discussion is exactly about that. It says, conservation and management measures shall not discriminate between residents of different states, period. That's the first objective. Second, if it becomes necessary to allocate or assign fishing privileges among various United States fishermen, such allocation shall be A, fair and equitable to all such fishermen, B, reasonably calculated to promote conservation, and C, and this is the part we're talking about right now in this motion, carried out in such a manner that no particular individual, corporation, or other entity acquires an excessive share of such privileges. And that's exactly what this is being set up to monitor, to make sure that we comply with that third part, C. And if we have not complied with it, that we deal with that issue. If it turns out that what we did in last June, which it's no secret I disagreed with, turns out to have violated this precept, then we are obligated under the law to deal with it in some way. And you can't deal with it if you don't investigate it and monitor what's happened. So, you know, I think the motion is exactly on point to the problem that we have to, that we're required under the law to work on.
Why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, I know the chairman from the MID may have to leave early, but I wanted to ask him if he would describe to this council what he's going through in one of his plans in terms of defining an excessive share. Thank you. Okay, we're back to the motion on the board. I'd ask the chair of the MID if he would just very briefly touch on something his council's dealing with, which is the surf clam excessive share discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try to be brief and address that. We've been going through a process in our amendment of that plan to try to respond to concerns about defining an excessive share for the surf clam fishery. And one of the difficulties we have is the plan is almost 20 years old. Another problem is the fact that the ownership is not as transparent as we would hope, such that we could really address it through management. Right now, the ownership shares are listed, but some of the ownership shares are held by banks, so it's not clear who owns or controls those shares. So this is one of the difficulties we have to get to through the amendment process. But we started out with an approach to try to define excessive shares in terms of market power. And so Dr. Anderson, my vice chairman, was involved in that. And the effort was to try to get at whether or not there was monopolistic or monopsonistic power in that industry. And so they started out by looking at price elasticities in that market. And that the results of that analysis, I think, were somewhat inconclusive. And so we've gone to a new approach, and we're working now with the Science Center to try to impanel a group of outside experts that would attempt to define excessive shares and mainly on market power type considerations, and then that would go to a CIE level review. So this would be the first time that type of exercise was undertaken. It's still under development. We're working with the Science Center to try to define how that group is going to operate and how it's going to be populated and funded. But this has slowed us down some, and now it's quite a significant process. But we hope at the end of that to have a solid basis for defining an excessive share. But it does go, I think, to show how difficult it is if you wait that long to try to address the issue. So, I'll leave it at that unless you want to hear any more, John.
Thank you, Rick. Anyone else on the council on the motion on the board? Sally?
Yeah. I think the comments from the MID just illustrate that we really should be talking about this sooner rather than later. And certainly it is a balance. I voted in favor of getting rid of the 20% for the very reasons that were expressed by Associated Fisheries of Maine, that there needs to be flexibility so that the fishery can do what it needs to do to achieve the kind of consolidation that's needed. At the same time, there needs to be a balance on the other end of the scale to make sure that it doesn't go too far. And we weren't able to make that happen through Amendment 16. So, you know, we need to keep this on the table. We need to address it. It's a critical component of the groundfish fishery, of any fishery that's going to be moving in this direction. And I think we should take a lesson from the MID and not put it off, and address it very clearly and on the table sooner rather than later.
Okay, we're on the motion to amend. Anything further? Ready for the question? I'll go to the audience. Aaron?
Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center and Sector Manager for the Northeast Coastal Community Sector. I just want to say that I think it was about a couple months ago, the Gulf of Maine Research Institute organized a panel discussion with some representatives from the Pacific and North Pacific regions talking about catch share systems. And some of their recommendations were that we that there's a lot of benefit to looking at the issue of consolidation and the issue of the fleet composition and this sort of visioning that you're discussing here before the start of the catch share system, or at least as early in the process as possible, because once you get into it and once some of those dynamics have started and once the fleet starts changing, the composition starts changing, it's much harder to enact some sort of, you know, after-the-fact provisions. So I just mentioned that as, you know, something to consider today. I think there's a lot of value to a visioning process, and I want to mention that the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance did a fleet visioning project. I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was several years ago. So I think there'd be some value, too, in the PDT and the Oversight Committee going back to take a look at those recommendations. Thank you.
Judd?
Judd Crawford, Pew Environment Group. We support this motion. This is an issue that we have commented on at various points during the development of Amendment 16. As I see it, this is a plan to analyze and try to improve understanding and make plans and to go forward eyes open, and I think it's an important thing to do. I agree with the comments that others have made, and I hope that you will support the motion.
Harriet Diedrichson, Port of New Bedford, and as I said before, I have a scallop permit. And what the people decide to do and ground fish and so forth, I do have a monkfish rights permit. That's their fishery, and it's up to them to speak up. But you've been talking about scallops earlier, and you're talking about sectors and consolidation and stacking and all that's being talked about in the scallop Amendment 15. And what I feel is that members of the council and people who are advisors, industry advisors, and oversight committees, it's important. I would have thought that some of these things or all of these things would have been well looked into before you went ahead with your amendment, and everything would have been transparent and people would have educated themselves with what is out there. Because in the scallop amendment, there's the Olson report that has been written by Dr. Olson, who works for National Marine Fisheries. And there were a couple of comments when she presented it at the scallop PDT, and wasn't too much said. I haven't seen it used much after it's been done. It's like it's done. It's a social and economic, social science of it, and it's not being used. It really is, doesn't have the weight. But at scalloping, there's been a lot of talk in the scallop plan about capacity reduction. So in the last reauthorization of Magnuson, NOAA asked that if a study could be done on capacity. And they turned out a paper, about 25 pages. And I got that paper, and I've tried to read it a few times to try to understand it better. And when you look at that paper is telling you that there's overcapacity in the clam fishery. They have their own formula for how they figure capacity. And that lots of things about capacity reduction that hasn't been brought up at all. Destacking, for one thing, although Pat alluded to that down in Plymouth when that was brought up, that wouldn't be capacity reduction to stack and destack. That's in their paper. And then as I read that, they talk about the sable fishery
And I've read that. That's more difficult to get through because I'm not familiar at all with that fishery. And it talks about that there you can only own three permits. You can only stack three permits. And people who owned more when the ITQ went in, they were grandfathered, but when they resell, it can only be three permits, and they have to be owner-operated. So there is a lot of information out there, and I would ask, I know there's some members here on the council that have seen some of that paperwork. I would think that these papers should be read, because here we've been going on how long with the that they're saying Amendment 15 is capacity reduction and you got destacking in there. So at this point, I want to bring it up. There are papers out there, and I think the more knowledge everybody has, the industry and everybody, the more transparent to work in, to go ahead and blindly, when this is people's income, their livelihood and their children forward depend on it. It's upsetting to always hear, we don't have time, we don't have time. You know, then it's a poor planning of time. Then there's something basically wrong with the system then, in my estimation, if that's the story. But thank you.
Okay, back to the council on the motion to amend. Ready for the question? Everybody see what the motion to amend is? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen in favor, opposed. Two. Motion to amend carries 15-2. Now on the main motion as amended. Anything further? Anything further on the main motion as amended? Ready for the question? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 17. Anything further under priorities, Mary Beth?
As I indicated earlier, I thought getting ready for this discussion item, it was best to go back and listen to our discussion in November, which I did. And the one thing that was unclear to me was, now I've lost the correct paperwork here, but the ACLAM committee, there was discussion about maintaining it, doing away with it, going back to species committees, and, you know, listening to the audio without, I guess, being able to see the nod, people nodding their heads around the room, I don't really know where we ended up on that. I think I even sent you, Mr. Chairman, an email afterwards saying that I had submitted, you know, what my preferred committees were, and following our discussion in November, I wasn't sure if it was even relevant anymore. So if we could have a discussion about that, are we continuing with our species committee? Are we having this, you know, joint ACL committee, or what direction are we going in there?
Well, that's the reason I haven't changed the committee assignments at this moment, because I knew that this was on the agenda again to finalize this, and I hope after today I'll be able to set the committees up so that they can function and we can get our work done. As it stands now, the ACLAM specs committee still stands, you know, according to this proposal, and so that would be one committee.
Thank you. And when I listened to this discussion, it was really all over the place, with it seemed like half the people saying, no, don't have it, let's continue with our species committees, and the other half saying, no, this was the way to go, and it seemed rather unresolved. So I would like to hear some people's thoughts on that, if we could.
Yeah, me too. Jimmy?
Yeah, I don't know where we are or not, but I think we need to deal with, I think this is the committee that's supposed to be dealing with both whiting and red crabs, so for ACLs and AMs, and I think we have to have that happen at some point for 2012 for those species. to make sure we have the ACLs and AMs to 2011. So I think we need to keep the committee intact and start to work to make sure we are on track to get the law implemented, get the rules implemented to have these ACLs and AMs.
You know, the point of, I'm thinking back to November, if I remember correctly, and you probably, I haven't listened to the audio, so you might correct me if I'm wrong, but the point on monkfish, we had a discussion about when we get past what we're doing right now, monkfish, and get into the discussion of an ITQ or a catch share in monkfish, that at that point we might break off and have a specific monkfish committee look into that issue. That was my recollection. I could be wrong, but all right, Beth.
No, I think that is, you know, in line with what the discussion was, and I think I would look to the chairman of the monkfish committee, and my understanding, I haven't followed it closely, is that perhaps at this point monkfish has developed ACLs and AMs. I mean, the amendment is moving forward, and you have to wonder if this particular committee should be devoted to just whiting and red crab and let the monkfish committee continue with their work.
I mean, that was my understanding of the conversation we had in November. I mean, the we're about to go out to public hearing with the ACL and AM component of the monkfish amendment. And following all the work that Phil's going to do to get that ready to go out the door, we'll be getting work on the catch share component in the fall. So it's that work's done, you know. But you know, if it make help for the monkfish committee members to help out with the other two, that's fine as well. It's your choice, Mr. Chair.
Mary Beth.
I think that if you're going to move at all on the other item, it would be best. It seems to me to be best. Whiting and red crab are starting from scratch. They need to get the ACLs and AMs in place, and I would think that it'd be best just to leave the monkfish committee doing their work, and just have a focused group in development of ACLs and AMs for whiting. I don't know if anybody else thinks that's a bad idea, so I'll just wait versus offering a motion at this point.
Yeah, actually, a follow-up to that is a discussion I want to have about skates in a minute. And with the skates and monks combined, I think what Mary Beth is suggesting makes sense. If we have a combined monk skate committee, and it makes sense to me to have a placeholder for skates pending the outcome of the SSC's review. And I'm anticipating a report at our April meeting, at which point we're going to have to determine whether or not we need to reconvene the skate committee to adjust the ABC. So we might have too many balls in the air by combining everybody all together in one committee.
I think what I hear is the idea that whiting, red crab stay as they are, peel monkfish out, and leave the monkfish skate committee as it's previously been established. Is that what I'm hearing? Is there any objection to that? Seeing none. So we don't have to go through the formal motions and establishment. I'll take that as a yes. All right. Anything further under priorities? Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you need a motion to have a placeholder for skates pending the SSC's review?
Well, on that issue, we had some discussion yesterday, and it appeared that the SSC was standing ready to receive an update from the PDT in March. And what I'm hearing from Chris Kellogg today is that it's highly unlikely that the PDT can meet and review that additional year and have it ready for the mailing deadline for the SSC in March. And I think the next meeting for the SSC isn't until the beginning of the summer. Is that right, Pat? Which is unfortunate, because I think skates is going to become a big problem for at the levels that they're currently set, I think it's going to be a problem for the ground fish industry and down the road the scallop industry. And I think that we also have the issue we're going to hear about a little bit later about the calibration workshop and transitioning off of Albatross and into Bigelow. And I don't know what the findings are for skates, but it would seem to me that if we're going to have spec package on the street, we'd want to have continuity on this spec package through all the available Albatross data. And then when we write the next spec package, it'll incorporate the Bigelow. David?
Yeah, a possible way forward here. I mean, you can't. We've got to submit something at some point. We can't just keep pulling things back every time a new data point pops up, or we'll never get anything done. We've already held up skates once because we were waiting for an update. My suggestion would be to submit it, and if something radically changes, the SSC radically rejiggers it somehow, comes up with radically different numbers, if they be sent in, it'll still be under review at that time probably. You just send those in as a comment and, you know, let it be dealt with at that level, and then we revisit it again, you know, the next time we set annual specs. Otherwise, we're just going to hold these plans back forever because there'll always be a data point that's just out of reach. We got to stop someplace and send it forward.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting we withdraw the skate plan that's in the register right now for comment. I'm just thinking about, and I guess it's unfortunate Steve Cadron's not here, but is it possible to move a skate item that's on their March agenda to the next meeting? You know, so in anticipation of the PDT being able to incorporate the newest data.
What we can do is aim for a May meeting rather than a summer, like a June or July meeting. I think we were always talking about a May meeting, and Steve and I discussed yesterday having a three-day meeting in order to accommodate skates. So we could get that done earlier. I don't know how helpful that is in terms of a timeline. I think it sounds better to me, but, you know, from a work perspective, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know what the data point's going to tell us and what the SSC is going to do with it, but just trying to accommodate them as well. So, okay. So that's where we are with that. When the SSC gets the info and looks at it, you know, we'll find out what they have to say about it. So we have a monkfish / skate committee, and we have a red crab whiting committee. Anything further under priorities? Mary Beth?
Yeah, just one more quick item. And there was some discussion at the herring committee, and Rodney had thought he would offer a motion. And I think he's thinking now with all the stuff that's on the table that maybe it's not the right time to make the motion. And perhaps he's right. When we first started talking about priorities, we had sort of a list of all the things we wanted to do. We had stuff below the line, above the line. And I think really the point of the motion really was the herring industry would like to have, you know, that F&P considered for catch shares. And I certainly understand that given this list, it's not going to be on the list for 2010, that's for sure, but some recognition that it, you know, be on the council's, you know, list for priorities and consideration as we move forward. I think that's probably enough for today.
Okay. Anything further under priorities? So rather than seek a formal motion, excuse me, for all the changes we made, by consensus, is everyone clear on what changes we made to the priorities today? Okay. Guess we're done with that agenda item then. No? Yes? Oh, that was wrong. Okay, so we'll move right into the next agenda item. As an 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 item.